This is Sophie Grant interviewing Lynn Routledge. So can you tell me how you first got involved with No Fit State and what role you played?
It was for the Community Immortal show, the first show in the spaceship tent, and they put out a request for 8 professional circus performers to work with the company on that project, and quite a few of my mates, like Shana and Helen, Shana Brandel and Helen Finch, were doing it and saying it was one of the most fun they had doing a show. So I kind of went along and did that.
So is that the only show that you've worked on? How long have you worked?
No, I did that one, and then I did all of the incarnations of Immortal. And then I did Park Life and loads of kind of corporate gigs and loads of teaching.
All right. So what's your experience been like working with the company?
Mixed. Some of it's been absolutely fantastic, really inspiring, as good as it could be, and others of it have been really not very good at all.
Can you tell me a bit about why the good things were so good and why the bad times were so bad?
The good things were good. Like, there's a lot of people that work within the company that I really like and really respect. Like Ali Williams, I just think's amazing. And people like Firenze Guidi that they brought in on all the Immortal shows is very inspiring director to work with. She's really good at getting out of people something that's uniquely them. And she doesn't want performers to fit into a box and try and be something that they're not. She sort of tries to bring out something that's uniquely them and therefore is more interesting than just watching somebody do amazing tricks.
So what are the bad memories of working on No Fit State?
Ooh, I'm almost reluctant to go into it because there's a lot of the management team that I kind of felt like I had a real breakdown in relations with. And I lost a lot of respect for. And the upshot is I don't believe a word that they say, and I felt like they really didn't care about people. So which kind of goes against the philosophy of what I thought was brilliant about the company anyway.
Was this as the company grew?
Yeah, the changes that were happening, and it's a little bit like one of the things that I think No Fit have been really good at is they have really big ideas about something and the confidence to go for that. But they go for things that are a little bit beyond where they're at now, which is why they've grown so well and why they've been successful. But there's a cost attached to that. And I feel like the cost of that gets paid by the people that they employ. It's probably got a lot better. But during the time I was working for them, yeah, it felt like the cost on individuals was too high. From some of the management team, they had an idea that all you needed as a performer was the applause of the audience and that makes it all right. And I felt like that really doesn't understand where most performers are coming from.
So were you a performer?
Yeah.
What do you do?
In No Fit State, I did swinging trapeze, doubles rope, they were my main acts, doubles rope with Gareth Bailey. And then I did like static trapeze, solo rope, silks, pretty much any aerial sort of, yeah. So, and lots of teaching on the first year of Immortal, they had 8 professionals. Or was it 4? It was only four professionals, I think. It was two women professionals and two male professionals, and then about 10 trainees. And part of our job as professionals was to train up trainees as well. So we were always doing a lot of teaching on top of doing acts.
So how long altogether were you involved with No Fit State? When did you start and when did that all come to end?
Probably about a decade, all in all. So whenever the first community model show was, and then 2 years later, it was the run of the Fully Model show, which went for 4 years. And then there was the Annex, and I did loads of work at the Annex. And I was hanging around, I was still working with them when they moved to John Street. But they instigated a lot of changes on that move to John Street, which I didn't like, and I didn't feel that... Yeah, I didn't like a lot of the changes that were happening at that point. It didn't make people feel valued. And I felt like they started doing sort of like evaluating things, and they'd send out all these questionnaires to all the students, and then they'd do exactly what they wanted to do. And again, it's that thing of, fine, do exactly what you want to do, but don't pretend that it's a consultation when you've got the information from the students, but you're actually ignoring it and you're doing what you want to do anyway, which it's fine, do what you want to do. It's your company, it's your thing, but don't pretend it's something that it isn't. If that makes
sense.
So
when was your last involvement with No Fit State, and how did that all come to an end? Or do you still have involvement with them now?
No, I resigned. But I did go back because Ali asked me if I'd be involved in a particular park life thing. And because Ali asked me, in my head, I was working for Ali, and I would do anything for Ali because I think she's an awesome woman. And her heart is totally in the right place. And I would totally trust her with my life. So I went back and did the park life things because Ali had asked me. But I think the thing precipitated me actually leaving. It was ongoing. But they'd put up a sign in the new John Street thing saying aerialists are not allowed to train on their own, which is fair enough. And I was sitting in the foyer and Alison walked past, and because you never saw the health and safety officer and she was the general manager, I kind of went, oh, can I have a word with you? And I basically asked, what constitutes aerial training? It's like, if I want to just climb a rope and thinking of that as conditioning, is that aerial training or is it conditioning? If I want to just do pull-ups on a trapeze, if I want to practice meat hooks, you know, things that are sort of strength training but on equipment, is that still you can't do it on your own, or can you basically go, right, well, nobody's in, I'll just do meat hooks, I won't do any tricks. And I just wanted to clarify that because I knew loads of people would ask me anyway, but I wanted to clarify it for myself because I was quite often, like, I was in training all the time. You know, quite often there might not be anybody else in. And I got pulled into a disciplinary meeting for not respecting health and safety processes and procedures, which I was livid about because I just thought I could have gone in that room and just done exactly what I thought. But because I do respect health and safety processes and procedures, I asked a question. And it was a question that the person I was asking it to hadn't thought of and didn't know the answer to, and just assumed the worst possible, interpreted my question the worst possible light. And I figured that if you can interpret what I'm asking in that way, that's such a fundamental breakdown of trust. I don't want to be in that situation. I don't want that amount of negativity in my life. I resigned in that meeting. And I just, it's like, if that's what you think, after I've worked for you for almost a decade and, worked so hard and, you know, in some really horrific situations and conditions at times.
So what is it that you do now?
Pretty much the same. I'm still an aerialist, I'm still performing, I still do lots of teaching. I work a lot with incandescents now. Which are a great company to work with, and lots of, pretty much doing the same as I've done for the last 20 years, but I just don't really, I get asked a lot because people know, I teach a lot of students, and they know that I've worked with NoFit State, so I get asked a lot about NoFit State.
Tell me about some of the best memories maybe that you had, maybe earlier days when things didn't have that effect.
The Immortal Show, it's like, was so awesome a show to be in. It's like, I can't imagine putting myself into a situation where I would do the same show for 4 years. That is kind of almost my definition of really not a very good time. But because of the way Forenza works, and it's so much integrated with the audience reaction to things, that one night was never the same as another. You'd do your acts and they'd be more or less the same, but you'd have some of the most magical interactions with people. And like one of my favourite ones when we were doing, it was the last year of Immortal, so we were at the Roundhouse.
Yeah.
And we'd got this donut stage that ended up, we chopped the legs off and we used it for park life. And we all had to do these little pre-show activities, and I was making jewellery out of old coins, so a little piercing sole on the back of a chair. And we were in France, and there's these kids, and this little lad turned up with a face dressed like a tiger, all painted like a tiger. And I had the most amazing interaction with him, and I gave him one of my coins and his sister one of my coins. And he didn't want the one that I'd given him. He wanted this cow, and having to change and giving him the cow. But I was being all scared because he was a tiger and he was going like, rah. So I was like, I ended up realising I'm sat on a chair. So after I was hiding from this scary tiger boy, I got the chair out and I was like putting the chair at him so he couldn't get to me. And then I was like, I need a whip. And Bryony, in her pre-show, she'd got a whip. So suddenly I've got a chair, a whip and a tiger in a circus. We just had this whole improvised tiger taming routine going on, and it was awesome. And then because I gave him one of the coins, so he'd got my email address, and I'd written Immortal Jewellery on the back of the little cards that I'd put them onto. About 4 years later, I got an email off this little kid saying, you probably don't remember me, but I am Tiger Boy, and I came to see the show in Campere, I think it was. But it's just like, a little 8-year-old who was 4 at the time writing, and was still so full of memories about the show and how much it had blown him away. It's like, and the end was just like, P.S. sorry for the bad English of dad. So things like that, that show had an effect on people. And there's other times, and there's another bit where all these letters came down from the sky, dropped down with little notes inside. And in the first year that we did them, we all contributed to writing the little notes inside. And I remember talking to this woman who'd come the previous year, and she was a cancer sufferer. She was recovering from having cancer. And she got a little note that said, I'm not scared of death because death's already dead. And she came back a year later, and that little card had just meant so much to her, and she just felt like it was a sign from the universe that she was going to be all right.
Yeah.
And she came back a year later to tell us all about it.
Oh, that's incredible.
And so, there was lots of moments like that that were just so deeply, magically moving and that's the bits that are what I think of as NoFit State. And a time when this woman came, I'd moved a trapeze, I'd rigged it really low because my nephew was visiting, so I could teach him a bit of trapeze. This little old lady walked into the tent with a walking stick and a handbag. She was about 80. And it turned out she used to work in a circus when she was a kid. And she ended up giving me a walking stick, giving me a handbag, getting her hands on the trapeze and trying to get on. And she was just criticising it for not not having animals and not smelling of sawdust. But, just meeting an old woman in her 80s that had been in the circus when she was a kid.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So do you have any other stories to tell you before we bring the interview to an end?
Oh, I mean, it was like a decade of life, so they just, there's loads of them.
Can you think of anything that someone maybe listening to this in 200 years might think is well worth listening?
Oh, some of the nightmare ones were things like going in through in Germany. We'd been told by the German health and safety people that we needed 6-foot stakes, and we always use like 3-foot stakes. So I don't know whether it was Tom Rack or Tim or the combo of the two were like, well, let's just get all the stakes in before the health and safety people come. And I think they're called the Tuft or something. And like, you can't do nothing without their say-so.
Yeah.
But we'd all hammered in all the stakes, and then the health and safety people come and it's like, no, them stakes are, we've told you, you need 6-foot stakes, not 3. We had to take all the stakes out, go and get some 6-foot stakes and hammer them in. So it's just like, oh, nightmare. And I think at the same venue, there'd been a rock concert the day before, and like the telehandlers had just churned up all the ground. And Tom Rack had us, the whole company, with sledgehammers hitting the floor straight, like pounding the floor. And we were like, can't you just go hire a roller? You can get a roller probably from a hire shop for about 50 quid and we could just roll it. But it's like, that'll cost me 50 quid. I can make you lot work for naught. And for hours and hours, the whole company were hitting the floor with sledgehammers. And you'd got, like, you know, all the aerialists with blisters all over their hands and, yeah.
Oh,
it's just like, no, don't do it to us. This is not treating people with love and respect. Yeah, so that's some of the times when you're just like, no. But, I mean, it's like, yeah. Like, swinging in the roundhouse, when we did the roundhouse, that was awesome. And right from day one of doing Immortal, we nearly the whole company could see it in the roundhouse because we'd all seen De La Garda then. It was like, this show had worked so well there. So that was quite amazing when we actually finally took the show into a building. And there's a bit right at the end that we called the body percussion, where we used to like hit ourselves with this choreography, but it involved a lot of falling over. And three of us, I think it was me, Gareth and Howie, got to do the body percussion bit at the end of the show right on the top of the grid in the roundhouse.
Okay.
It's about 14 metres up. There's like a wire mesh grid. And if you're looking down, you don't really see the wires. It just looks like there's people suspended on nothing and then falling over onto nothing. So that was nice, getting to do bits like that.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come and speak to me. I feel like you've told me some really good stuff.